Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello and welcome to Everything is Fine, a podcast for women over 40. We are your hosts. I'm Jen Romolini.
And I'm Kim France.
Later on the show today, we have the graphic designer and sort of design powerhouse, Bonnie Siegler. But before that, let's have a check-in. Hello, Kim. How are you doing today?
You know what, Bonnie, I almost called you Bonnie. Jen, I'm fine, but I've had it with my hair. I've just had it up the fucking wall with my hair.
You know what? Okay, well, I want you to tell me about that because I, too, have had it with my fucking hair.
Oh, You have perfect shiksa blonde hair. You're fine. I have bad hair. I've always had bad hair. It's curly, but at the same time, frizzy. And then a bunch of it fell out. So I have extensions. So now the only good hair in my head is the extensions. And as my hair goes grayer and grayer and grayer, as we were talking about with the guest who will be on by the time I talk about this, like the texture changes. Yes. So my hair is just a mess. And I work so hard on it whenever I, you know, not every day, but whenever I wash it, I blow dry it. I style it. I like run the curling iron through it. And then like 2 hours later, it just looks like hell again. And I want a solution. I want a hair solution. I want to not fight my hair's nature so hard. And at the same time, I don't want curly hair. So I'm irritated about that. I don't expect you to have anything encouraging to say, except for I know that you too, because we were talking about it just yesterday, are having some thoughts about your hair.
I'm fucking cutting it all off. I'm done. I'm so fucking simple because I had that weird thing, and I don't know if it's fucking perimenopause because I put my hair in the wrong position when I slept in it, but I had clumps of my hair falling out, right? And it's not vitamins. I just had all my blood work done. I'm fine. It's something that my hair is falling out. So yes, my hair over Zoom looks great. My hair is really thin right now. It's really thin. It's really limp. It's really fucking fine. It's down to my tits. I need to figure out what I want to do with it, but I have like hair paralysis, but that's just me. I'm going to chop it into a bob as soon as I get through the first draft of this book. That's going to be my reward. But I have a question for you. Why don't you want to have curly hair? I've seen you with curly hair. You look cute with curly hair. Why don't you want curly hair?
I don't like curly hair on me. I like it on others. To me, I just feel like I'm like kind of a messy, sloppy hippie girl when I have curly hair. And I think that straight hair is more sophisticated looking.
Is that but have you tried it as a woman in your 50s? Because that might have been an old version of yourself. Like you're not, you can't pass as a hippie girl now.
I know. Of that you are correct. I don't know. I just, the curls bum me out. Bum me out. But eventually I'm going to have to accept them because I just will not spend this much time on hair that even after I spend a great deal of time on it, still refuses to do what I'm asking it to do.
That's really frustrating. And it's a lot of time and it's a lot of energy and extensions take a really long time. You know, it's like, oh, this is all a lot. Do you have a dream hair that you've thought of? I mean, I feel like somebody can help you achieve your dream with hair.
You know, the happiest I ever was with my hair was when I was in college and it was very short. It was like 80s short, you know, a little longer on the tops, short on the sides, little flock of seagullsy. And I obviously wouldn't have a flock of seagulls haircut today, but when it was very short, I was very happy, but I also had a 21-year-old face, which makes a difference with very short hair.
It does. It does. And I, too, am afraid to let go of all this hair because there's, like, some weird attachment to it. Like, there's a sexuality and there's, like, a whole, I don't know.
Oh,
like
it's huge.
Like, a sensuousness, the whole thing. I'm afraid to let go of all this hair. But at the same time, I'm afraid of also having, and this doesn't, I think, exist anymore, but do you remember the haircut that all moms got, like, when we were growing up? It was, like, short in the back, a little spiky on the top. It was, like... I do remember it.
It's not from when I was a childhood, but it is from when you were a child.
Yes. It was like, that's what all moms got. And I don't want that haircut. So it's like weird because I don't want my hair to mark me as being middle-aged, but at the same time, I don't really want the hassle of it anymore.
Yep. That is the conundrum. That is really the conundrum.
Go ahead.
I did a bob maybe 5 years ago, and it looked so boring and so schlumpy. Like, I saw them on other women. They look super cool. I think you are cool enough and dress cool enough that you would still look cool even with a bob, I think. I do. I think that you, and you have good hair for a bob. I don't have good hair for a bob.
Well, okay. Let's get off one person at a time's hair issues. Okay. Do you have a dream hair that you're looking for?
A dream hair would be somebody else's hair entirely on my head. So I had better hair, like a better head of hair. That would just be my dream. I don't have a dream haircut. I don't have a dream hairstyle. No. Maybe I need to, what are those things called?
Inspiration board?
Not what do they call them when it's part of like manifesting and all? It has a name. I forget what it is. But yeah, I need to
A vision board.
I need a vision board of haircuts.
You might need a vision board of haircuts. Like that might be where you have to go next with this.
But I've always been told you should never fall in love with like the way somebody looks with their haircut because they've got a different face shape than you. They've got different hair quality than you.
I know, but you have to get more specific than that. Maybe what you need to do is get more specific than that. And like, look at people who have your face shape and have your hair texture.
I might. It really is a stupid, stupid problem to be discussing for this long.
Okay. It's not though. Because it takes up a lot of time.
Hair is really important. When my hair was all falling out when I was about 38 or 39, I felt so like demoralized.
When I had a kid and all my hair was falling out, and that was when I first got bangs. Well, no, I'd had them and then I got them again. But that was when I got bangs because I'd lost so much hair and there was some hair that was growing back and I just had these weird shelf of short bangs just fringing around my forehead. And my hair was all weird after that, after having a baby. And it's never really come back in a normal way. It's never really been as good as it was before. But I don't have that many hair problems. And thank God, because I don't know how to do anything with my hair. I can barely blow it dry. And I have a drawer full of the wands and the tools, but I don't, God love me, I could never use them.
Well, I just use them to straighten out my hair. And I do think I want to give a shout out to my very favorite blow dryer, which is very, very fast. And
it's by
Harry Josh. It's
okay.
It's called, let's see where I'm looking at it right now. The Harry Josh Tools Pro Dryer. It costs, they sell it on Dermstore. They're always running specials on it if you like sign up for their newsletter. It costs about $100 less than the Dyson blow dryer, which is supposed to be the fastest, but it is actually the fastest.
Oh, that's good, because there's nothing worse than like spending a long time drying your hair.
The most,
I mean, there's lots
boring
of things worth, but it's so boring. It's so boring.
I think whenever anybody says there's nothing worse than, it is with the understanding that there is always something worse than.
Yes.
Right?
Well, that's totally true. It's totally true. Well, this week I have been working on a thing that I've never really been able to do before, which is the permission to be terrible. Mm-hmm. I'm having a really hard time writing, and it's really going poorly. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to let go of all this like boss babe bullshit. And I'm just going to be like, there's no heroine's journey here. This is just terrible. There's no poetry in this. I'm just slogging through and trying to get some work done in the hours that I deem acceptable to work. And it's really kind of liberating, the freedom to be terrible.
Well, it's like, also kind of a baller move. It's kind of a baller move. It means that you have a lot of confidence and you're not going to judge yourself based on what your output at the moment is, but based on what it is when you've had more time to like hone in on it.
It's not though, but it's really fucking with me a lot. It's really fucking with me a lot because I like to really be in control. And I think that this is why we don't make changes in our lives. I think this is like career changes. I think this is why we don't take big swings, because you're kind of terrible at everything the first time you do it.
Yep.
You just kind of suck. And it's like the freedom, allowing yourself the freedom to be terrible and just kind of accepting, okay, I'm going into like this dark wood and I don't know, dark woods, whatever, dark forest. I'm going into something that I don't know where the fuck it's going to lead me to. And I don't feel good. And I'm just going to walk through it and see what happens. I'm just going to walk through this discomfort and see what happens. I'm just going to keep, and I've also had to keep myself really sober because I cannot walk through being this panicky that I suck. Mm-hmm. Oh, while also being kind of drunk. You know what
right,
I mean?
Of course.
Or like, so I'm real sober. I'm walking through like my worst creative fears, and my worst creative fear is that I suck.
Well, that and you don't suck, which you know. But the other thing is like sitting with that discomfort for me, and I think for a lot of other people too, is the most uncomfortable thing in the world. It's the hardest thing. I do not sit with discomfort well. I do not sit with moments of, and also we have to address that being a writer is one thing and being a writer/editor is another and can make writing really hell. Because if you're an editor, you know that what you just wrote sucked much more than you do if you're just a writer.
That's
unless
true.
You're an extremely self-aware one.
That's true. It's also the worst because there's nothing more boring than hearing someone talk about their book, but it's the only thing the person wants to talk about. So anyway, on that note, I think we should stick to hair. I'm just going to cut this off. Okay, let's get into the episode.
Our guest today is Bonnie Siegler. Bonnie heads the graphic design firm 8 and a half. And before that, she co-founded Number 17, a graphic design company that, upon many, many other things, designed the Lucky Magazine logo and its test issue and created templates for columns and features that we used for years. Her list of dream clients includes Late Night with Seth Meyers, The New Yorker, The Criterion Collection, Random House, 30 Rock, Sex and the City, This American Life, and tons more. She has taught in the graduate programs of Yale and the School of Visual Arts and is the author of 2 books, Dear Client, which is a guide for people who work with creatives, and Signs of Resistance, which is a visual history of protest in America. And she's got another book coming out soon that we'll discuss in a bit. Welcome, Bonnie.
Thank you so much for having me.
I am so happy you're here. And the first question I want to ask you is one that I think about when I think about you. And that's the fact that you and I are roughly the same age. And I really marvel at the level of ambition you continue to bring to your working life. on this show, we talk a lot about how ambition can wane in midlife. And I have to know how you've resisted this because I don't understand it.
Gosh, you know, I just get up and work every day. I don't feel particularly ambitious. It's just, I guess I really like what I do. It's fun for me. So it's not work, as they say.
Yeah.
Only thing I can think of, I really, truly enjoy my job. And right. I also come up with different projects like the books to keep me going, to keep me interested, to keep me on my game.
Right. You met your previous business partner, Emily, when you were both 22, and you guys started the company Number 17 together at 30, and you stayed work partners for like 20 years, which is a huge accomplishment, I think, in the annals of like work spousedom. How did you guys swing that?
I don't know, but we met when we were 22, we became best friends, like really girly best friends, shared all our clothes and everything. And we worked together for those first 8 years while we each had other jobs. And then it was just like the most natural thing. We were just like, want to start a company? Okay, let's start a company. It was like that. Mm-hmm. And I think if we knew more, we wouldn't have done it. Like we were so naive. We didn't know anything about anything, and that gave us the courage to do it, to pull the trigger. We had no money, we had nothing. We did it out of my bedroom and my living room in my small apartment in the West Village, and we stayed there for a few months. We had a really good marriage for a really long time, and then I got a husband, and then I had a husband and a wife. Which, you know, two marriages can be difficult to handle, but it was great for almost 20 years, and yeah. Our friendship, that means, was for like 30 years or 35 years. It was crazy.
I want to go back to a little bit of staying ambitious and staying engaged, because I think what's interesting is you can love what you do and you can get totally fried and burn out. But it sounds like what you do is actually you have a diverse slate of projects and you keep your brain kind of stimulated and keep yourself engaged in a number of different things, a number of different sort of tentacles of the same thing. And I'm wondering, how do you choose your projects?
Well, first of all, that is definitely the benefit of a company like this, is if a job is terrible, it'll be over soon. Mm. Constantly have a bunch of different clients going on. So you throw yourself into something for 4 or 6 months and then you're done. And that change, constantly cycling through completely different people, you know, collaborators and colleagues and just the work itself. I can't imagine working like at an agency where I'd have to work on, you know, let's just say Dove for 5 years and only think about Dove soap for 5 years. That would be really, really hard for me. I could see being burned out. But because I get to do so many different things all the time, you know, the next thing will be more interesting if this one isn't.
Totally. And I wonder, because obviously there's so many advantages to running your own thing, especially as we get older, because we have so much wisdom. It's like we're, you know, the stakes are, you know, you're making it for yourself or you're breaking it for yourself, right? And I'm wondering what you find are the advantages or actually the disadvantages too of running a company on your own.
Oh, I only see advantages.
Awesome.
Really, even with having to make a paycheck?
Yes.
Because I think that would be the most stressful thing.
Well, okay, you're right in that I wouldn't have done this when I was 30 by myself. I mean, the only way I could do it was with my best friend at my side. But then once I had the experience under my belt, it didn't feel as daunting. I knew what I was doing. Somebody once said to me, like with a client who was a regular client, they said, "You wouldn't talk to me like that if I paid your medical insurance." And I thought, well, there's another advantage that I get to say whatever I want. If you fire me, it's just a job, not the job. But I get to be honest about how I feel without that risk.
And that was always the thing. I mean, I remember when I worked with you guys and we had our big, we worked all summer on pages. And then we had our big meeting with all the bosses. Remember that meeting?
With Cy, you mean? With Cy Newhouse?
With Cy Newhouse and Steve yes. Florio and Chuck Townsend. Like the entire 11th floor showed up.
Kim, I have to tell you, I literally bought the only suit I owned for that meeting. I never had a suit before or since. I spent like $700 at Agnes B on a perfect suit.
Oh, God.
And Cy Newhouse walked in sweatpants. And
yep.
I vowed to never wear a suit again.
That's hilarious. For some reason, I remember you guys dressed. I remember I was wearing a suit I bought at APC. But I remembered you guys both dressed casually. And I remember, like, you guys had a poster on your wall of, like, all the Wacky Pack prototypes. Do you remember that?
Of course.
And it was like your office was always such a fun, goofy, not goofy is the wrong word, like a fun, funny place to visit. And I remember when I was first told about you guys, my friend who said you should work with them said, you know, they come on one way, but they're a really big deal and you better show them some respect. And I always thought that was a cool thing that you guys did, because you took what you did lightly, but you were both really heavy hitters, and you obviously still are.
Well, that's, I love that description. Yeah, we did. Having fun is a part of it. If you're smiling, you come up with better ideas.
Right.
It's really hard to like engage other people's emotions when you're miserable.
Right. Right.
I mean, because that's a lot of what what we do is connect with you know, consumers or customers or readers, and try and connect with their emotions, what they get out of it. So you have to be pretty clear and happy when you're doing it.
How have you managed to stay like flexible and on top of the changes in the digital landscape since, for instance, we met?
Oh gosh, I don't think I have. I mean, I really don't. My son, I have a 21-year-old who is a influencer, which he started his business when he was 15, so 6 years ago. So I've learned a lot through him about social media and Instagram and influencing, unfortunately, NFTs and Bitcoin and all of that stuff. But I'm not on top of it. It's not my world. I'm 58 years old. That's my world.
Well, now that you've mentioned your son, I have to ask about him, because your son is not just an influencer. He's like an influencer with almost 1 million followers on Instagram. And isn't that right?
And 7 million followers across, you know, different platforms.
What is that even like?
Crazy, right? So he has a few different things that he does. One is about the NBA, and that's Hoops Nation. One is about collectibles and cards, and that's called Talking Shop. And then he also has a podcast called The Buster Show, which is where he interviews like Mike Breen and Walt Frazier and Jerry West and people like that. And also he does interviews on his podcast with real players. But what's cool is he's their age. So he's talking to them one-on-one,
right?
As opposed to a 65-year-old man talking to a 21-year-old player. So he's really tapped into something, and they really enjoy, like, he used to play, he was hired by the NBA to play video games with NBA players for TikTok. So he had to play video games, got paid with his, you know, favorite players, and they videoed it. That was a job.
What is it like to have a famous kid?
It's
is that weird?
It is a little weird. I mean, when we go out, like around here where we live in Connecticut, kids always point to him. Like if we're in a restaurant and there's other kids in there, they're always like, oh my God, that's Buster.
How crazy. It's
really weird.
How do you help him navigate that?
Well, I help him with the business side of it for sure, because I read contracts and things like that, and billing and keeping, you know, doing stuff for his taxes and things like that, I help him with. But the other stuff, what young people want to hear, talk about and see, it's like in his DNA or something. It's just, he's got it. And he's talked to some of my clients and given advice, because he knows what to do to navigate through all of that in a way that I just don't.
Do you feel like you've learned from him?
Oh, completely. I ask him all the time for advice. Absolutely.
Well, it does feel like, and I have an 11-year-old, and I have a kid who's just at the end of Gen Z, and it does feel like the world that they're going to be in, for the first time in my life, I'm 48, it feels like the world they're going to be working in is something that is so out of my purview. Like, I have no concept of how to do things the way that they do, if that makes any sense. I feel like this is a massive divide in a way. And I don't know if that's just age and everybody feels that way when they're like, you know, 40 years younger than you, or, you know, but it feels like the world that they're going to be doing business in is we have to learn from them if we're going to keep doing business, I guess.
I totally agree. And, you know, it was when Buster decided not to go to college, most people couldn't believe it. Like, mom said to me, like, I think that's really irresponsible of you to let him do that. Meanwhile, he's 18 years old and gets to decide for himself. Right. Now, even this is just 4 years later, now people say, oh my God, that was so smart to not go to college. It's just in 4 years, that shift. But also we did tour colleges, and none of them mentioned the internet on the college tours. Like, it just wasn't a piece of the puzzle, which seems crazy, and especially convinced him not to go to college. I think it's changing now because it has to, but I agree. It's a different world.
It's a different world, and institutions have not caught up to them. I was even thinking about, I was listening to an interview with you on Design Matters, and I was listening to your story. And, you know, a lot of times in your career, you had like two big jobs at once, right? Which is just crazy to me, right? And I remember working like that. And I remember you said at one point, well, it didn't matter. I didn't have to sleep. I was young. It was okay. And I was thinking about our relationship to work and how different it is, because there was a kind of an obvious path almost, you know, you put in that kind of work and then you'd have some reward at the end, a prize would spit out. And I don't think that careers are as linear now as they used to be. I don't know if you agree with this, but, and I don't even know if you're an expert in this, but I think it's interesting because I think that you are, you know, obviously a lot of talent, but you really worked hard and then you got a lot of rewards from that. And I just don't know if the working world is the same as it used to be, that there's a pattern you can follow in the same way.
Yeah, I think everything is up in the air now. Everything. I mean, we know, right? People used to work for a company for their whole lives, and that company took care of them. So obviously that went away a long time ago. Now people hope to get 5 to 10 years out of a job.
Right.
Before moving on. So it's affected everybody. But again, another reason to have your own company is you're in control of that. At least you're in control of it. It's not up to somebody you don't respect and don't like to decide what you do or don't do next.
How has what clients want changed, or has it?
Well, it definitely has. I think people are smarter about design now than, let's see, we started our company in 93. So that's how long ago? that's a really long time. So people were, really terrible in the beginning. And it's one of the reasons I wrote Dear Client was, let's just get all this out of the way. Like, there's a story in the book about Emily and I went to show a record company executive our portfolio. Back in the days, there were portfolios. And we went into his office and laid the book out. And then he got a call on his cell phone and moved to leave the room as we were flipping through the portfolio, and turned to us right before he left and said, you guys keep going.
No.
There was nobody else in the room. Like, what the hell? So yes, people know. It's also crazy now that I wrote this book, some new clients I have read the book before they call me. And so they're already with following all the rules and regulations, which doesn't need to be the case. You don't need to have read the book, but it's kind of adorable at the same time. They want to do right. They want to they want to do the right thing to get the right result. And I respect that.
We're going to take a quick break for some ads.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
And we're back. Who in your career was your first client where you were like, okay, now I think I may get to do this for a living? Like your first, like I remember the first time my byline was in the Village Voice and I couldn't believe the actual physical fact of my byline being in the Village Voice. Was there ever a client where you were like, oh my God, I can't believe, like Saturday Night Live or something?
Well, that was after we started our company. So that doesn't really count. When Emily and I, we met at our first job, which did work for galleries and museums. And I designed the brochure for Robert De Niro Sr.'s painting show. Hmm.
Oh, so wow.
he was a really great painter and he had a show at a gallery and we did the poster and the brochure and the advertising and all of that stuff. And then on opening night, there was Robert De Niro and all of his friends. That was kind of exciting.
That's cool.
Are things changing as you're getting older and how, I mean, you're so established and you're so successful. So I imagine they may not have as much, but I wonder are clients relating to you differently, either good or bad, as you're older than you were?
Well, definitely better as I'm older, definitely. Because when we were 30-year-old girls or even 40-year-old girls, it was just unbelievable misogyny. It was just the same. We used to say we needed a Remington Steele. We thought if only we had a guy, he could be totally stupid, but he had to be handsome. And he could be the front person that clients would talk to so they could feel good that they were working with a man.
Right.
And we thought it would work, really. But now it's better because now old age trumps, you know, everything else.
You feel that way.
I do.
I mean, I hope to feel that way. I like to feel that way. But we talk a lot on this show about how experience is trumped by just youth and, you know, cheap, you know, less expensiveness.
Right. Yes, that, and also what they can do on the computer that I can't do.
Right. But again, this all comes back to, well, two things. First off, I know women who have made fake mail assistants, like fake Gmail accounts, and it's a fake mail assistant who will take all your appointments, and they will find that, like, that is an easier way to like run their businesses sometimes, like with just like, you know, John booking your appointments, because John will get more respect than you will. But that's one. But the second thing is, this comes back to having your own business, which is, if someone's an asshole who's being ageist, you can be like, no, next.
Totally.
Right?
Absolutely. It just, you know, it depends on how big the job is.
Right.
Right.
I mean, there's always the job where you don't want to walk.
Right.
Either because you care about the work you've done, or because, you know, there are other people involved who you care about. And it, you know, it's like making anything, any project, like making a movie or something, where you get together with a bunch of people and you work really hard for a short period of time and then you separate. So once you make those connections and you have that family, it can be difficult to walk away.
Yeah. Do you have a staff, Bonnie?
I did when COVID hit, but now everybody's remote.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I spend my days alone, which is very different.
Yeah, I'll bet. Because what you do is so collaborative. That must be weird.
I know. I talk to myself.
No, it is hard to get that creative energy, especially when things are visual, right? It's hard to communicate that. That's one thing that's really hard to communicate over Zoom. Like, I don't know, should it be a little more blue? You know, it's like, I feel like that's something that must be challenging to be communicating virtually all the time.
Yeah, and to hang, I do it for myself alone, but to hang a bunch of different sketches on the wall and talk about them.
Yeah.
It's impossible to do on Zoom.
Yeah. Bonnie, how do you reconcile your creativity and your ambition with motherhood? I know your kids are older now, but was it challenging when they were small?
You know, I had, yes and no. It was challenging because of time, and I was still working, you know, all the time when my kids were younger. Although I realized it just doesn't matter as much when they're very young. I know parents of young children will hate me for saying this, but I thought it was more important that I be with them when they were babies, and it would be less important when they got older because they could understand that mommy was working. But I actually think it doesn't matter. As long as someone who loves them is with them when they're babies, they really need you when they're older.
You said a similar thing, Jen.
This is the big lie about working motherhood. This is the big lie that, like, oh my God, that first couple of years, it doesn't matter. Any competent, like, kind person can, like, you know, go through the paces of the diaper change and the hugging and the burping and the, you know, the cleaning, the feeding. It's like when they're 11, 12, 13, I don't know, because I don't have an older kid than that, but they are running big things by you. And if you're not present for them, I am finding that my child really needs me to be present in a way that I had not anticipated. And nobody had told me.
Exactly. And also just being able to be aware, not just when they do talk to you, but when they don't talk to you. Just
yes.
Be able to be there. So that is one thing that I've learned. But also having kids made me faster and better and smarter, because I had to be.
Like, yes.
I no longer had the option of slacking because I had this family to support now. And yeah, it just changed me. Other people get knocked down by it. But for me, it made me like, oh, okay, I have to be out of here by 6. I'm going to finish this job by 6, period.
Well, the more you have to do, the more you do. I firmly believe that.
And just like more organized and less like, oh, I'm not going to get caught up in that drama. I have to be more efficient because I got drama at home. Like I can't deal with this office drama. I became a much more efficient worker in motherhood than I had been previous to that. I think motherhood actually accelerated my career to some degree.
I totally agree. But really, it's nice to have a change like that, you know.
Yeah.
Why don't people talk more about this? This is like the first I'm hearing of it.
Well, I don't know why people, because people are so caught up in like talking about like sleep schedules and like, I don't know. It's a real reprioritizing I found. I mean, I think that's what you're saying too, Bonnie.
Yes, absolutely. Reprioritizing. Yeah.
Equally, a thing we talk about a lot is my understanding from Kim, and I hope I'm not wrong about this, but is that you're married to an artist. And we talk a lot about, or we've talked in the past about the challenges of being, a unit with two creatives in it. How's that been for you?
I mean, it's been great because I think he's so awesome and
talented. I
use him all the time. I mean, we're very different. So I'm a graphic designer. So I need a project, like a blank piece of paper with no rhyme or reason to do anything terrifies me. That's not where I live. But if he gets any kind of assignment, that terrifies him. He needs a blank piece of paper where he can do whatever he wants because he's a fine artist and I'm a commercial artist. So we come at it from very different ways, which is helpful. But we've also done projects together. I hired him to work on this documentary for HBO that we worked on called The Number on Great Grandpa's Arm. And it's for young people to learn about the Holocaust. And Jeff did the animation of all the footage from the war because the actual footage is too difficult for young people to look at. So he animated it and he won an Emmy for it.
Wow.
But other times, we're just each other's eyes. Like, just look at this and tell me what you think. We help each other a lot, especially now that I've no designers here. I have Jeff.
Oh, that's amazing. So so you collaborate well together.
Yeah. He's done a few music videos recently for Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young that I helped him with. I know it's weird to do videos for Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, but it's Graham Nash hired him.
The video that he did for Our House is so pretty that thinking about it is giving me the chills.
Oh, that's so sweet.
Wait, but what is true. His name? What is his name? So people are going to want to look him up. What is his name?
His name is Jeff Scher, S-C-H-E-R. And if you go to YouTube and put in Our House, it's the official video.
It's so cute.
And it's of Our House, too. He used Our House in it.
Oh, wow.
It's very sweet.
It's super sweet. It'll make you cry for sure, Romolini.
Oh, I love to cry. Bunny, you wrote a book about how to talk to creatives. What made you want to write that?
So when I'm involved in AIGA, which is the American Institute of Graphic, the National Design Organization, and whenever designers get together at these national conferences, thousands of people, all anybody does is share client disaster stories. And they're all the same. Everybody has the same clients who make the same mistakes and do the wrong things. And so I just thought, what if we give them the benefit of the doubt and teach them instead of just being mad at them? So I wrote this book which is basically, if you want to get the best work out of a creative person, follow these simple rules. And you don't have to follow all of them, and everybody messes up every once in a while, but it just gives you a slightly different way to think about it because we're a slightly different group. We're not doing your taxes. We have to bring our emotional selves to the project for it to be successful. And if you're mean to us, that will not work in your favor.
right, then, like a more sensitive group.
Yeah, definitely. And just to say that outright, but the best, this was seriously the best marketing idea I had. You can have the book sent anonymously to anybody in a plain brown paper bag.
So funny. What's the worst client mistake I made? If you remember that far back, I don't.
I don't remember. We had a great time. We were inventing a magazine, Kim, about shopping.
It was pretty fun.
Do you remember? I mean, of course you remember everybody saying that's a stupid idea for a magazine.
Everybody thought it was the dumbest idea for a magazine. I had lunch with a Vogue editor who gave me a laundry list of reasons why it would never work. Yep.
Then it worked.
It worked amazingly well. Yep. I wonder what you think, though, are the biggest mistakes that people make when they're managing creative people? Because I think, so many people are managing young writers and young designers, even young people who are making their social media, or, they're creative people. What mistakes are people making when they're people, normies who are not creative people? What mistakes are they making?
Okay. Well, one chapter in the book is called "I Don't Care What Your Spouse Thinks."
This is Oh my God. I've run up against that. I don't care what your mother-in-law thinks. Oh, I've actually,
it's everybody. The worst is your 13-year-old daughter. Like literally people, especially if it's on the internet, they trust their kids more than themselves. So my daughter looked at it last night. She's 13, but she's really good at this. And she said, like, and then fill in whatever criticism the 13-year-old daughter had, which is obviously unbelievable. The daughter didn't read the brief. The daughter wasn't at any of the meetings. Unless she's going to start coming, I don't give a shit what she thinks.
No, I had a columnist when I was working at one of the jobs I had. I had a young Samantha Irby doing a column for me, and somebody's mother-in-law found Samantha Irby offensive, and they wanted me to pull the column. And I was like, I don't, this isn't for this person's mother-in-law. Like, this trust you. Do you like it? Trust yourself. I like it. You know, our readers seem to like it.
Well,
that is such a true thing that happens. It's like the external people. That's so funny.
Right. They don't trust their own opinions, but they'll trust somebody else who isn't actually really involved.
Yes. Huh. Yes. Yeah.
Another big one, which is constant, and one of the ones that everybody always has to deal with, is about Garanimals. Do you remember Garanimals?
Of course. Yes.
Okay. So, and I don't need to explain what they are. Thank you. So people will look at a design presentation and want to take the bottom half of one, the top half of the other, and just put them together, even though they came from completely different places with completely different follow through, and it just won't work together, but they like one aspect of one and one aspect of another and just want to put them together and don't understand why it can't happen.
It makes me understand why really bad decisions sometimes get made in advertising and just in anything creative, because like there was a funny scene in Succession about it. Like when you're like, you get snowblind because you're looking at so many like slightly different iterations of the same thing. And you can see where a whole group of people would just be like, oh no, that one, definitely. Like A with B.
Wait, what happened in Succession?
Oh, it was so funny. It was Cousin Greg and Tom, and they're working on a new like tagline for the company.
Oh, right. Exactly that. And they ended up with that piece of shit tagline.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, I don't want you to go without talking about your new book and the Times article that inspired it.
Okay. So what happened is, after Trump was elected, I was just flailing, as was most of us. But I did notice that it was so much like 1933 in Germany. My family escaped Nazi Germany, and it just felt super scary to me. And I was wondering why nobody was talking about that, why the Holocaust wasn't just a topic of conversation at this moment when we hired this racist fascist. So I got an article in the New York Times about my grandfather's escape, because years later, he happened to film Marilyn Monroe shooting The 7-Year Itch. And I had this footage, and I'd never done anything with it, but I thought, well, here, I'm going to use this footage and get an article about the Holocaust. So I got this article. It appeared the Sunday before the inauguration, Trump's inauguration. And then the day after it ran, a super famous director bought the rights to make it into a movie, the story of my grandfather, which was super exciting. But then nothing happened over the next few years. It sort of just got a little lost. And then Helene Stepinski, the journalist who wrote the original article, and I decided to write a book which expanded on the whole story and included the guy who I just found out through research, through my own like ancestry-like research, the guy who signed for my grandfather and the rest of my family to come to America, founded DC Comics. Mm. And he signed for them in April 1938, which was when Superman came out for the first time. So the book is called The American Way, A True Story of Nazi Escape, Superman and Marilyn Monroe. And Simon & Schuster bought it, and we're turning it in November. So we just finished it.
Yeah, we'll include the original story in the show notes. It's really quite something.
And actually, before you go, since this is a podcast, if you want to talk about this, you don't have to, but I know you and Kim have had some conversations about menopause, and I'm just wondering if you want to talk about menopause at all and how you're doing in it.
I'm doing terribly in menopause. It's just the temperature thing is just terrible, and I'm shocked and maddened that I didn't know this was coming. Mm-hmm. Everybody wasn't always talking about this thing that's going on, and that doctors just say like, yeah, sorry, like that just is what it is. And as with all things like this, I feel like if this happened to men, we would all know that this was happening and there would be treatments for it to keep your temperature more normal.
If there was a 10-year physical transformation that happened to men, can you imagine?
Like, no, we would like stand up and say a pledge to it at school.
It's like, exactly. And it's all like, and your work life would be orchestrated around it. Mm-hmm. So you would retire before menopause, and then you would take a break for 10 years while you go through it, and then you would start work again.
Yeah. I mean, that would be really smart, since like there's so many things that they're now finding, like brain fog, that make it really hard to work, you know, not to mention the temperature fluctuation, which I have some of, but not as much yet.
Bonnie told me she has something called cold flashes. This was new to me.
So it's like you have an ice cube, a long icicle inside you, and it keeps you cold. And there's nothing you can do about it. Like dressing warmer doesn't help. Blankets don't help because it's inside.
Mm. Oh my God. It's like people who have breast implants in the cold, they don't warm up. So it is like you have two ice cubes inside of you.
Okay. That is a horrible fact.
I know. I'm sorry. I really welcome Bonnie. I really bring the fun.
That is so just, it hurt. My breasts hurt now that you said that.
Do you have to rub them to warm them up?
I think that they just don't warm up. They just, I mean, you know, if you're outside and you're cold, there's no blood running through them, you know? So that's what happens. But it sounds like, honestly, Bonnie, you have something similar going on inside you.
Maybe someone else would warm up your boobies for you.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not like imagining like a hair dryer on the breasts. I'm just like, oh God. All right, well, Bonnie, where can people find you?
On Instagram. Can you guys just put my links and stuff?
Of course. We can put everything.
I actually took an Instagram break for a couple of months. But it was great not being on Instagram, actually. I really enjoyed it.
Well, you know, they're doing all this press lately about how Facebook hid research they had about the effects of Instagram on young women. But I think I don't think you have to be young to be affected adversely by it.
Or a woman.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, I think you can be anyone. It's a nightmare. I mean, look, we're all complicit in the nightmare because we're all like showing the best versions of ourselves, the best version of our work, even when we're showing the poor versions of either. It's also a show. So we're all complicit in it, but we're just seeing these things and we're like, oh, I don't have, it's not me, you know, all day long, just swipe, swipe, swipe.
Yeah, totally.
But
it's nice to not go on. It really is.
Well, not to mention, I read something at some point that we're not supposed to see this many images, that it's overwhelming our brains to absorb this many images at once. Like there's so many images that you see on Instagram in such a short time that actually there's something about that messes with your brain.
What does it do to the brains of people whose brains aren't developed yet?
unclear. Maybe it wasn't in the brief that I read on this, but yikes. You know.
No, I mean, it can only do worse things than it does with somebody who's an adult. Jeez.
But so you took a break. Did you take a break because you were feeling like Instagram? Were you feeling like it was, were you feeling like you were having a toxic relationship with it? Or were you just like, I don't need this? Or it was a time suck or what?
It was definitely a time suck. I think what happened is I went to Berlin over the summer to do research for my book, and I didn't post anything from the trip, and it felt more special to me because I didn't post. Like, I held it very close to my chest and it felt good, and I just wanted that good feeling to continue, like to experience this journey without thinking about how people were responding to it.
Mm-hmm.
Was really freeing for me. And so then when I came back, this was in the beginning of August. And when I came back, I was like, well, why not keep that good feeling going?
I know what I want to ask you about. One more thing, promise, before we go. I know I keep saying that. We've talked to a lot of women who have, after COVID or during COVID, gone gray. And you've done kind of the exact opposite. You're like blonde.
Well,
you're like Targaryen blonde from Game of
I love that. So I'm the queen of dragons. I'm the mother of dragons.
You're the mother of dragons.
So what happened? So first of all, I've literally been every hair color over the course of my life. You've seen a few of them, Kim.
Mm-hmm.
But then COVID made it so obviously I had to reconsider everything. And so I went blonde so that when the gray fully came in, and by then the gray was white, it would be a softer transition. And so now it's white all on the top. My hair is completely white and blonde on the bottom.
Mm.
So I'm going white. That's the ultimate goal.
That's a really smart strategy.
So it's really gradual, and I only have to color my hair, you know, every 4 or 5 months as opposed to every 3 weeks, which is what it was before.
Yeah, that's where I am.
It's
Yeah, it looks great. It really looks good.
But yeah, I've been black, brown, red, blonde, you know, everything.
Right.
I've tried everything over the years. But this one's a keeper.
Good. Well, Bonnie, thank you so much for doing this. We really liked having you on.
Thank you so much. It was really fun talking to you guys.
Thanks, Bonnie. Thanks for listening to Everything Is Fine. We are your hosts. I'm Jen Romolini.
And I'm Kim France.
If you like the show, you know what to do. Rate, review it on all the platforms. If you haven't done that yet, please do it now. That would be great. It helps us build audience. Thank you. If you want to get special episodes, be a part of our monthly live events, and get bonus content, please join our Patreon at patreon.com/everythingisfine. We're on Instagram at EIF Podcast. You can find us on Twitter and Facebook. If you want to email us, we're at everythingisfinethepodcast@gmail.com. And you can reach Kim on her blog, or find Kim on her blog, girlsofacertainage.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.